Welcome to Equity Gurus, A Closer Look, where you, the investor, get to listen as Chris Perry grills the best and the brightest in the corporate sector to help you find out who's the wheat and who's the chaff. Listen in.
I'm Mark Lustig. I'm the CEO of Canna Royalty Corp. I founded the company 2 years ago. The ticker is CRZ.
So, Mark, it's been a bit of a roller coaster ride for you with almost all of the roller coasters going upwards.
Well, it's been a volatile marketplace, but cannabis has been an exciting place to be, and we're very pleased with the portfolio of assets that we've put together over the 2 years that we've been in development. And we're taking the next step here by going public, which we think is going to play out very well in terms of acquisitions and other business opportunities that we have in front of us.
So when we first talked, it was about a year and a half ago, and I think we both felt we're on the same page in terms of that there was a big opportunity in the cannabis space, not necessarily in just being a grower or just being a processor, but that no one had actually really set out to build brands yet to become the Kleenex, as it were, of weed. What with all the difficulties going from state to state in the US and Canada's evolving marketplace. But you went pretty hard on that strategy, and it looks like it's paid off for you. Explain it to somebody who's never heard of Canna Royalty before exactly what it is you're doing.
Sure. We have taken a different approach than a lot of the companies. A number of investors would be obviously very familiar with the Canadian licensed producer model, which is really just centered around a grow operation and servicing the Canadian medical marketplace. We took a much different approach. We built a more diversified platform whereby we were making investments at the asset level into what we view as the higher value spectrum of the cannabis sector, mostly around products that come from extraction or cannabis extracts, and the ability to develop IP or products inside of the sector. So I'll give you an example. A number of the Canadian LPs would be selling flower or bud. In the U.S., because of the market there and the recreationalization of various of the states there, all of the different products are available. And most of those products come from the ability to do extraction and then to find new and interesting ways to deliver the extracted material to the patient or the consumer. And that's really where we've focused our investments, is in the areas of extraction and product development, and as you said, in brands. So now we have access to a number of those types of products across what would be the fully recreational market for cannabis products, as seen in markets like Washington, Oregon, and California.
So in terms of building a brand in the U.S., that's complicated because obviously you've got XYZ Edibles in Colorado and then a different company licensed in Washington State, another one in Oregon. How did you bridge that gap to be able to take a brand into other places?
Well, it's very much based off of a licensing strategy. So we have the trademarks in place or the IP in place on a variety of the different products. And then depending on the legal framework within each state, we really are licensing the IP around that product or that brand to the licensor in various of the states. In Canada, I should use that as a good example because I imagine a number of your investors and followers are looking at the Canadian marketplace because that seems to be where all the action is from a capital markets perspective. Our approach there has been to partner with one LP in particular, which is Aphria, and work on agreements whereby we can potentially license out our IP to Aphria as our way to have access to the Canadian marketplace. Mm-hmm. But the rest of the portfolio in terms of U.S. exposure is being licensed in various states to various entities in those states. And what they're doing is they're licensing the brand or the formulations that we've put together inside the portfolio.
So, you know, long story short, if you take a piece of an edibles producer in one state, the fact that you have a piece of other licensees in other areas in other states allows sort of cross-pollinization of those brands.
That's correct.
Right. So it's a big plus to all the companies you're working with, not just from a sort of view of having access to finance, but having access to extra SKUs and a much larger audience. And then on the other side of that, you hold the brand in a means that allows you to build something truly national rather than focusing on state to state.
That's right. I mean, when you go into a number of these states, you end up finding that various entrepreneurs or operators of various facilities or labs in these states have one piece of the puzzle, but when they partner with Cannabis Royalties, or Canna Royalty as we're now called, they are able to fill in the rest of that picture through vertical integration by us bringing some of the things that they're lacking, including mm-hmm. capital and brands and products and equipment and know-how.
So usually in situations like these, you know, someone coming with a little bit of money, say, thanks very much, we now own 40% of you, carry on as you're doing. But what you're doing is making the businesses bigger by taking a piece of them.
That's right. Ultimately, that's the end goal. The way that we go about that differs depending on our counterparty or our partner and what their needs are. In some cases, we're doing royalty structures. In other cases, we have convertible or debt instruments in place that ultimately give us exposure to the strategic outcomes of that partner. And in other cases, we own significant equity shares in various of these assets.
So you acquired a lot of assets, or at least a piece of a lot of assets in a very short time, pretty much under the radar as well. Was that by design to help you negotiate deals without people expecting the killer valuation?
It has been. You know, we're playing in a very interesting period of time for the cannabis sector. First of all, on the one hand, this is very new. As everyone's aware, cannabis has been in the dark, deep corners of people's basements for years now, and it's all just sort of coming to the surface. And so from that perspective, there are new entrepreneurs who are innovating great ideas and products and just haven't had access to capital, which we are coming in with at the right time, we think, and at the right place. And on the other side of the equation, lenders, which would normally be in place to provide capital to other types of businesses, just can't do that for the obvious reasons of regulatory things related to the cannabis sector. So we've been in a bit of a sweet spot, and our effort has been around the idea of either products, brands, devices, or delivery mechanisms. And so a lot of the limelight would be currently around the big Canadian licensed producers, and we've managed to stay off of that radar screen by focusing on more deals with a more diverse end objective in the sense that we're building this portfolio of assets.
I guess that also allows you to be a little bit flexible. If one subsector of the market suddenly takes off, gets a lot of consumer interest, you're already in the space. You don't need to go chasing.
That's exactly right. And there's a couple of areas that's playing out very nicely for us now with some of the investments that we've made. In one example would be in one of the device companies that we own that's starting to get a lot of traction. That company is called Resolve Digital, which makes a smart inhaler type of product for the medical market. And there are a couple of deals which we're in the process of completing that I think will be new areas that people will be focused on and will have been there and been in the right place at the right time, hopefully.
So you mentioned earlier your deal with Aphria. That sort of came out of nowhere for a lot of people because, Canna Royalty didn't really have a big profile at the time. Obviously, they liked what they saw a lot to give you what was at the time a really strong valuation for a first look at your products. If you could describe a little bit of that process.
Sure. We really like the Aphria management team. They've got a very deep experience and track record of success. And if you think about it from the LP perspective, and I can't speak for them, but what I think they liked was that they've been focused on cultivating. And when it was clear that the market is going to expand here in Canada, They wanted a strategy whereby they could get access to formulations and other types of products pending however the legislation comes down in terms of which of those products is going to be part of this marketplace. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there are different ways that an LP could go about it. They could try and develop this expertise in-house, or they could license some of this know-how from other places. Or in the case of Aphria, they first made an investment into the company on our dollar financing round. They later exercised their warrants on that round early to increase their ownership position. They also participated on the sub-receipt financing, which we closed in October, in order to maintain their ownership level. And since then, we've completed with Aphria a royalty transaction whereby they have the right of first refusal on various of our products in our portfolio, depending on which ones are deemed to be a part of the new recreational system in Canada. And if they develop those and proceed by commercializing those products, then we receive a royalty on those products. So that's the manner in which they've gone about their strategy for, in part, at least their strategy for developing, you know, product IP and products part of their plan.
I imagine that deal has helped you with financing other deals going forward, exposure to a large player like that for a small company that could find themselves being in that sort of distribution channel is no small thing.
Yeah, they've been a great partner. They are clearly one of the major players in the Canadian market, and for a sector that's getting as much attention and inflows of capital and excitement around the various companies, it was definitely a door opener that Aphria has been involved in. And like I said, they've been very good to partner with.
So is there any movement on that deal? Is there any early indication that they might be taking some of those products and running hard with them, or are we still in the early stages?
I think from their perspective, they want to see how this task force report plays out and what mm-hmm. The legislation looks like for various types of products before they make any bets on any one area. I know that they are also looking at other products from other developers of IP or other operators. So I couldn't really speak for them, but I think that that's a prudent approach, is to see which products are going to be a part of this new market in Canada. I have my ideas of ones that I think will be a part of it. I think that the inhaler and the vape cartridge is a preferred mechanism of delivery compared to smoking, obviously. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that capsules are going to be of interest from the medical perspective. Obviously, I mentioned an inhaler investment that we have, and I think that medical devices that provide dosing is going to be an important part of a solution in the future. I can also tell you that I think there are products that aren't going to be in very good standing, at least at the beginning, which may include edibles or mm-hmm. or the higher concentrated products like waxes and chatters.
So you're obviously coming to market with a much higher valuation, and I would assume, than what Aphria bought in with. So they're going to be happy with the deal as it stands. Your investors obviously are going to be happy with the deal because there's a lot of interest in the space. Did you watch Canopy sort of flying up the other week and think to yourself, oh, no, this is too much too soon? Were you happy to see things drop back a little bit? Do you think it's reasonable where things are now?
I'm not smart enough to predict the movements of the market. I do know that those companies that you mentioned, whether it's Aphria or Canopy, are obviously some of the bigger companies by market capitalization at current. And I think part of that is a reflection of the fact that those are listed on national exchanges, and that some of that is an inflow of money from the United States, where people want to invest in cannabis companies but just can't because there's a scarcity of listings of real companies on real exchanges in the U.S. So I think that some of the valuation has been created by inflow of capital from the U.S. I also think, this is my own opinion, but as these companies separate themselves in terms of size, it's giving them themselves almost even more credibility as major players in this area. And for an investor, that may be the difference between investing in something small and possibly more risky versus just having exposure to the cannabis sector in a handful of the bigger players out there.
So do you think companies like yourself are almost like a weed ETF, or companies like Canopy, for example, Africa, kind of royalties, that they have such a good spread now over the space that maybe as the market goes, so do they?
Yeah, I think that, not speaking for the other companies, but as it relates to Canna Royalty, I just really believe that this platform provides the investor with a more diverse collection of assets. So instead of investing in a Canadian LP, which you're exposed just to that license and that facility and that one management team, with Canna Royalty, you're getting a collection of assets. And those assets are geographically diverse, but they're also diverse in the sense that they touch on some of, I think, the higher growth areas within the cannabis sector. So I'm talking about extracted products and all of the different innovations that are going on the product side. And so I think that when you roll it all up into a situation like Canna Royalty, it just offers someone who's looking at the cannabis sector and not necessarily certain about one management team or one place in Canada or even the Canadian market, it offers that investor some more exposure to U.S. markets, legal states such as Washington, Oregon, California, and Arizona is where we have exposure, as well as I mentioned through our royalty agreement in Canada, gives that investor some exposure there as well.
So let's talk a little bit about the assets that you've come to town with. I've avoided mentioning much about them in the past when I've talked about Canna Royalty because it's such a moving target, a lot of these deals, I know, but especially with the rules in each state changing. But without getting you to read off the entire list, what would you say are the highlights of the assets that you hold at the moment?
Yeah, so I highlighted Resolve Digital, our medical device investment, Wagner DeMass, our equity investment into pre-rolled brands and manufacturing. I also mentioned Alternative Medical Enterprises, which is part equity investment, part royalty investment in Arizona and soon to be Florida. I followed that with our real estate investment into an operation in Washington, which is in production through a licensed extraction facility. And I finished by speaking about a joint venture partnership that we have in Oregon with a very large extraction lab there. One thing that I'm very pleased with is our California exposure. Everyone, I think, is starting to understand how large an opportunity California is. And we have several strategic assets in California, including an investment by convertible debt into an entity called BAS Research, which is doing very good things in a licensed facility in Berkeley, California. We own part of a large dispensary out of Oakland called Magnolia, and we've managed to use various strategic relationships that we have with both of those to really set off another business that we acquired, which is our cartridge and filling business called Dreamcatcher Labs and Green Rock Botanicals, which is made possible in ways through our various other investments in California. So that's a handful of some of the bigger ones. But as I said from the start, I think there are now 20 in total.
That's quite the group. I mean, most companies that call themselves roll-ups in this space right now maybe have three or four assets, and you're looking at 20 and still going.
Oh, yeah, and the still going part is getting even more exciting. I have found that as we've done more deals and the name starts to get out there more and the model seems to be more and more understood, we're actually getting access to even more deal flow. And some of the deals that we're looking at doing as we head into 2017 are getting bigger and I wouldn't say more exciting, but certainly filling in some gaps that we're looking to fill in. And I think part of that is made possible by our transition into being a public company, because clearly
public company stock. It gives you a currency to be able to use, at least if you wish, as part of the consideration in acquiring various businesses or investing in various businesses.
So I was going to say that when you do go public, which is I believe Wednesday, is that the latest?
It's this week sometime. I believe it looks like it'll be Thursday that we start trading.
So once that happens, assuming that there's any sort of upward mobility, does that catapult you into closing some deals that you've been sitting on the fence with?
Absolutely, but it's not based on the go public. We're well down the path with a half a dozen different deals that we're looking to close on. I don't know about year end, but certainly in Q1 at the latest, and that's with or without the public aspect. Although, you know, I was just pointing out that having that public currency, I think, is going to bode very well for our company and our investors going into 2017, because I think that there'll be, now that the space has started to capture people's interest and attention, I think that 2017 will see a lot of strategic transactions, including M&A and new types of investments into some new areas.
Invictus just announced, I think they're the first company in the wheat space in Canada to put forward a dividend. Is that on the cards for you on the back of any strong exit? Do you plan on pushing some of that back to investors, or is it more fuel for further growth?
I think that will come with time, especially when I think that the cash flow will start to accumulate in a pretty significant way from all of the different assets. It won't be in the near term. I'm aware of the Invictus story. They have a very nice asset in Future Harvest, which is, I think, the one that's generating that type of dividend. So I think that makes sense. But from our perspective, we're in such a high growth period right now that I think the sweet spot for us is deploying that capital into acquiring very interesting and innovative new products and IP.
Well, thank you for your time, Mark. I appreciate it a lot. It's been quite the interesting story sort of watching this from the sidelines as it's filled out. I wouldn't even try and guess what's going to happen when you go public, but I know that there's a lot of buzz. There's a lot of people contacting me for more information about your company. So I think with an ongoing volley of news coming most likely from you, it's going to be an interesting one to watch.
I appreciate your interest, Chris. I'd be happy to keep in touch, and I think you're right. I think our company is diverse, and the assets themselves generate a lot of developments, and some of the new things that we're looking at will keep investors on their toes for sure. So appreciate your time and interest.
Thanks, man.
You've been listening to Equity Gurus, A Closer Look. See you next time.